Jetzt fangen wir da. Hörst du dich?
Ja, ich höre mich. Ich weiß gar nicht, fängst du jetzt an, was zu sagen, oder?
Ja.
Also der Anfang quasi, ja.
Flo, can you English please?
What?
Can you English please?
Oh, Patrick, mal mit Englisch jetzt?
Ja, Dinglish ist heute dran.
Oh Gott, wie schön. Warte, with you is not good cherry eating.
Not good cherry eating.
Yeah.
Yes. Hello for all the English listeners. This will be an episode also in the English language.
English for insiders, English für Reingefallene.
So wird's sein.
Stadtland. Der Podcast. Stadtland.
So, herzlich willkommen.
Da gibt's ja, weißt du, wo wo das kommt?
Otto.
Otto, großartig.
Otto Walkes.
Und da gibt's ja ganz viele Sprichwörter, die man so, diese quasi 1:1 ins Englische übersetzt haben, ne?
Ja, richtig, richtig toll. Da gibt's richtig schöne
Sachen. My lovely Mr. Singing Club.
Oh, sehr gut.
Mein lieber Herr Gesangsverein.
But I have to quickly say hello. Will you translate what I'm saying for the people who don't speak English?
Nee.
Please, you have to.
Ja.
Hello and at all the English-speaking people.
Hallo an all die englischsprechenden Menschen.
Yes, this episode will have English content.
In dieser Episode wird Englisch gesprochen.
Yes.
Unter anderem.
Yes, but we will make some talk in German first. So if you want to continue with the only English part, so you push the forward button on your device where you're listening.
Also wenn ihr nur Englisch hören möchtet, dann spult jetzt vor.
Sehr gut, sehr gut. So I'm changing into the German language again to make the multinational exciting podcast a little bit more exciting. And then we come back to the English language later a little bit.
Yes? Also, ja, habt schon verstanden.
Habt
also
schon verstanden.
Englisch kommt nachher wieder.
Deshalb, das ist unsere Denglisch-Episode, liebe Leute, weil wir haben einen internationalen Gast nämlich hier und wir haben uns überlegt, wollen wir das alles übersetzen, wollen wir das dubben, aber dann dachten wir so, ach, unser Englisch ist halt doch nicht so geil und ich glaube, so ein Interview…
Was ihr auch nach einer Folge wahrscheinlich hören werdet.
Ja, wenn die Leute schon mit unserem Deutsch Probleme haben, stell dir mal vor, was
ich
mit
Ich sag ja mal, ich kann ja nur mal richtig Deutsch reden, geschweige denn Englisch. Ja.
Und stell dir das mal vor und deshalb haben wir uns entschieden, okay… Es wird so sein, es gibt einen Teil einfach in Englisch.
Unser Gast spricht so tolles Englisch.
Versteht
er. Da haben wir nichts da hinzuzufügen.
Ja, und uns versteht er da auch und es wird auf jeden Fall richtig toll sein.
Was ist zum Glück ist ja auch so, dass unser Gast ja den größten Teil redet und nicht wir.
Ja,
das ist gut.
Das ist wirklich gut.
Ja.
Und zwar haben wir überhaupt schon gesagt, was das Thema heute ist.
Nee.
Unser Thema, unser Gast wird um Trans wird's gehen.
Mhm. Um Transmenschen.
Ja, um
Transmenschen. Und ganz tollen Transmenschen geht's heute.
Und eine ganz tolle Transfrau. Was? Ich wollte Transmensch sagen.
Ach so, ich wollte gerade sagen, du
wolltest
was mit M sagen.
Nein.
Patrick, heiße Kiste.
Nein.
Hast du gleich schon mal direkt heiße Ohren gekriegt?
Ja, da habe ich das gezeigt. So, ich wollte, wenn du Mensch gesagt hast, dachte ich, sage ich auch Transmensch.
Uff.
Nein, Uff. Eine ganz schöne Transfrau. Das will ich nie sagen.
Ja, nee, Patrick, ich weiß.
Ganz ehrlich. Aber
manchmal flutscht es einem so über die Lippen.
Ja, die Leute haben immer irgendeine Meinung, deshalb muss ich das wirklich sagen. Nee, eine ganz tolle Transfrau. Und das ist eine sehr gute Freundin von mir und, glaube ich, auch langsam eine Freundin von dir.
Ich habe sie jetzt auch mal kennengelernt, nach all den Jahren
nach
auch
den
mal kennengelernt.
Nach allen Geschichten. Und das ist Gina Rosero. Und sie ist das erste Trans-Asian-Pacific Playmate-Model. Und sie wird so ein bisschen…
Sie ist ja auch auf den Philippinen aufgewachsen, muss man ja auch dazu sagen. Ne?
Aber das hört ihr dann alles im Interview. Deshalb fangen wir jetzt einfach an mal mit unserem wunderschönen Spiel. Das heißt
A bis Z.
Ja, und da wurde uns vorgeschlagen von dem
wundervollen Peter bei Instagram, der heißt @fotofalke.
Vorbilder. Mhm. Und ich glaube auch unsere Freundin Mia hat uns das auch schon mal vorgeschlagen. Deshalb auch Mia, falls das wirklich so ist.
Ich glaube, das ist ein Gerücht.
Ja, wir werden es ja sehen. Gut, dann fange ich mal an.
Ja.
A bis Z.
Stopp.
W.
Die habe ich ja erst, also das ist, ich muss ja immer gestehen, ich habe ja nicht ein Vorbild.
Ja.
Muss ich mal, ich habe ja mehrere Vorbilder.
Hat ja jeder auch.
Ja, ne? Und eine habe ich vor kurzem oder vielleicht vor einem halben Jahr erst entdeckt und zwar, kennst du Wendy Williams? Diese Moderatorin.
Ist nicht die Tennisspielerin?
Nee, das ist Serena Williams.
Ah, okay. Ich dachte, das sind Geschwister.
Ja, Serena und Vanessa.
Okay.
Ja, nee. Wendy Williams ist die Moderatorin. Erinnerst du dich dran? Die hatte damals bei Halloween, hatte die mal ein Freiheitsstatuen-Kostüm anders umgekippt in live.
Ah, stimmt.
Die,
ja,
das ist Wendy Williams,
ja,
ne?
Ja.
Die hat ja auch hier Naomi Smalls bei Drag Race
gemacht.
Genau, im Stage Game gemacht.
Ja.
Und die habe ich vor, die, ich kannte die schon länger, ich habe die aber nie so richtig wahrgenommen und habe die jetzt irgendwie für mich entdeckt. Und das ist wirklich, die ist unglaublich lustig. Die
hat eine Vorbildfunktion.
Die hat eine Daily, die hat eine Daily Talkshow,
ja,
wo sie quasi über Promis lästert.
Oh.
Aber nicht im Sinne von bösartig lästern, also schon Real Talk.
Real Talk.
Also die sagt's, wie es ist. Okay. Weißt du, kennst du Leute, die so die Sachen, die man sich manchmal so denkt, die Leute sprechen es dann aus?
Ja, die Leute kennt man.
Ja.
In manchen Situationen kommt es aber bei mir vor. Herz auf der Zunge, sage ich da immer.
Ja. Und Wendy Williams ist so eine Person und die ist unglaublich lustig, weil die auch so echt ist. Ne? Die kommt aus New Jersey, die Show ist in New York und ist unglaublich lustig, sagt ja auch immer, sie hat ja auch eine Perücke an, ne? Sagt sie
ja
auch immer,
okay, dass
sie immer Perücken, sie trägt Perücken. Das ist eine schwarze, People of Color, ne? Und die Art und Weise, und jetzt, die muss man dazu sagen, die hatte vor kurzem in ihrem eigenen Privatleben einiges liegen da schief,
okay,
weil
okay,
die hatte, der, ihr jetzt mittlerweile Ex-Mann, hatte eine Affäre mit deren Kind.
Was?
Ja, genau.
Wie?
Ein Riesenskandal.
Wie? Sein eigenes Kind?
Nee. Der hatte,
zugeheiratetes
Kind? Nee. Der hatte eine Affäre und hatte mit der Affäre halt erst ein Kind gekriegt.
Ach so, ich dachte, ach, der hat eine Affäre mit dem eigenen Kind.
Das war ja noch ein Ding. Die haben nur einen Sohn.
Ja, aber kann man auch eine Affäre haben? Ja, also.
Nee. Also der hatte eine Affäre und mit der hat er ein Kind gekriegt. Riesenskandal. Da hatte sie danach, war sie dann auch irgendwie in Pause, da ging es ja so relativ schlecht, da war es auch in der Show so ganz komisch immer. Und dann war es ja nachher, hat es dazugegeben, dass sie medikamentenabhängig war, hat sie auch in der Show gesagt, und dass sie in so einem Soberhaus lebt.
Mhm.
Soberhaus ist so ein Haus, wo so Suchtkranke hingehen quasi und die bringen den Tag da mit.
Ja, genau.
Und also sie ist wirklich real.
Ja.
Auch mit sich selber so. Ne? Und das fand ich so inspirierend für mich. Und wie die auch redet und was die so, also unglaublich witzig. Und eine meiner Vorbilder, Wendy Williams. Wenn ihr mir bei Instagram folgt, ich poste auch ständig irgendwelche Videos aus der Show, weil die so unglaublich lustig ist.
Ja, zu Wendy Williams kann ich ja nichts sagen, weil ich ja nicht mal weiß, was sie kommt. Also Vorbildfunktion kann ich nicht sagen.
Googelt mal Wendy Williams.
Aber da kann ich eine Schweinchenüberleitung machen und kann zu Wendy kann ich irgendetwas sagen.
Zu Wendy?
Ja, ich habe die Wendy Magazin, habe ich immer als Kind gelesen.
Mit den Pferden?
Mit den Pferden, genau. Und fand das immer ganz, ganz toll und habe damit die Wendy gelesen. Und vielleicht gab es da auch mal eine Situation, wo ich mal für so eine Agentur gearbeitet habe und dann auch mal bei so einer Wendy-Foto-Love-Story irgendwie dann mal vorgeschlagen worden bin. Und ja, das...
Warst du da dabei?
Das können wir dann mal. Da sage ich jetzt nichts dazu.
Hast du eine Wendy-Foto-Love-Story gemacht?
Mal wissen.
Ah.
Ich war in der engeren Auswahl, muss man sagen.
Und dann bist du aber nicht genommen worden.
Ich weiß es gar nicht mehr, wie es denn letztendlich war. Es war, glaube ich, ich habe 800 Euro gekriegt und ich war noch
Mark.
Es waren Euro.
Waren
schon Euro. Und den Flug nach Österreich und keine Ahnung, die Zugfahrt nach Österreich und alles. Und dann habe ich bei der Agentur dann abgesagt, weil ich ganz neuen Job angefangen habe und war ganz frisch auf dem Jobmarket. Und jetzt bereue ich es ein bisschen. Ja, sonst wäre ich jetzt ein Wendy Girl.
Aber was?
Ein Wendy Girl wäre ich dann. Wendy Fotos auf Story.
Patrick, also hier in dieser Wohnung tun sich heute Abgründe auf hier.
Und dann sind es einfach nur Yoga-Klamotten gewesen. Dafür habe ich dann mal gewoddelt.
Aber das passt doch auch total, oder?
Als hätte man damals schon die Agentur gewusst, die dann gesagt hat, hey, der modelt für Yoga-Klamotten, als hätten die schon gewusst, hey, der entwickelt sich.
Mach dir mal nicht bei die Pferde, mach dir mal zu den Yoga-Klamotten.
Ja.
Ja, Patrick, das fing an. Da fing das Universum an, ja.
Du bist dran?
Mhm.
Stopp. M fällt mir super mega leicht, das ist ein Vorbild für mich ist schon immer und zwar ist es meine Mama.
Ja. Ach, jetzt bist du bei. Ich sag, wenn die Williams kommst du mit der Mama.
Ja, aber ich muss wirklich sagen, ich habe nur mal so über, wenn ich so überlege, meine Mama hat echt eine Vorbildfunktion für mich, weil meine Mama ist eine Frau, die Familie hat drei Kinder großgezogen, mein Papa hat eine Firma aufgebaut und hat ihn da noch unterstützt und meine Mama ist echt eine, die bringt immer alle an den Tisch und die hat immer ein Ohr und ich muss wirklich sagen, wie die das alles geschafft hat in ihrem Leben und was die annimmt und ohne großes Murren und Zucken und irgendwie sich beschweren, muss ich wirklich sagen, meine Mama ist ein riesengroßes Vorbild für mich und ich glaube, das ist bei ganz vielen so, dass die Mama ein Vorbild ist und ich habe mal da auch einige Züge angenommen, wie zum Beispiel, wenn jemand kommt, dann gucke ich immer, dass die alle versorgt sind und dass immer alles, was da ist und Kühlschrank ist immer offen bei mir und bedient euch und bei uns ist es einfach so dieses fürsorglich sein und jemand bemüttern. Also wenn da jemand zu uns nach Hause kommt, meine Mama ist echt, muss ich wirklich sagen, auch bei meinen Freunden, dass die da immer kommt und wirklich probiert alles zu machen, dass da wirklich alles da ist, was die eventuell noch brauchen könnten. Und jetzt mittlerweile ist es dann Mandelmilch, Sojamilch und normale Milch. Es könnte ja sein, irgendjemand möchte ja eine bestimmte Milch.
Die hat Angst vor dir.
Nein.
Dass du ausrastest, wenn ich, du keine Mandelmilch
auch,
kriegst.
Wenn dann auch Gäste einfach da sind. Und das ist bei mir auch ein bisschen so, dass man immer guckt, ja, das habe ich von meiner Mama gelernt. Das ist echt ein großes Vorbild für mich, wie sie das managt und wie sie das macht.
Ja.
Das muss ich sagen. Vorbild Mama.
Ja.
Bei dir?
Das verstehe ich. Also ich meine, meine Mama ist ja nächstes Jahr, der ist schon 20 Jahre tot.
Ja.
Nächstes Jahr. Und wenn es überhaupt irgendein wirkliches Vorbild in meinem Leben gibt, dann ist das natürlich meine Mama.
Ja.
Ich bin quasi wie meine Mama.
Ja.
Also so erzogen und so, ja. So wie ich, wenn wer mich kennt und wer mich hört und so wie ist, war auch meine Mama. Ja. Vielleicht ein bisschen besseres Deutsch, ein bisschen langsamer geredet als ich. Aber alles das, was ich heute bin und werden soll und geworden bin, ist alles meine Mama schuld.
Ja. Das ist ja. Sehr schön.
Ja, ne, und, weil die mich auch das, ja.
Ja, ja. Nee, ich fand es auch ganz schön, als du mir gezeigt hast, als ich bei dir zu Hause war im Sommer, könnt ihr folgen auf unserer Stadtland-Schwul-Page, wo wir Ausflug ins Saarland hatten und da habe ich ja auch, war ich auf dem Friedhof, wo deine Mama ist und war da nochmal
genau.
Und ja. Hab mal so kennengelernt, wo du groß geworden bist und das war auch alles ganz schön.
Und es ist auch wirklich, so muss man ja auch wirklich sagen, das, die ist ja so, meine Mama ist ja, ich denke jeden Tag an die. Tatsächlich, seit schon immer, also auch seit 20 Jahren, seit sie schon tot ist. Und sie fehlt überall.
Ja, na klar.
Ja.
Ja, ich glaube, das kann niemand ersetzen.
Ja, und das ist, also wenn es überhaupt ein wirkliches Vorbild gibt, dann war es immer meine Mama.
Ich glaube halt so ein bisschen dran, solange man Leute einen erreicht haben und man Leute mit denen spricht und es weiterlebt, ihre Gedanken, leben die Personen auch weiter. So ein bisschen ist es doch auch in den südamerikanischen, wo die Tag der Toten feiern, wo die auch sagen, solange man Geschichten erzählt und sowas, bleiben die am Leben. Und ich glaube halt wirklich, den Imprint, den die Eltern auf einen hinterlassen, da leben die einfach weiter.
Ja. Ich muss aber nochmal sagen, also ich habe so viele Vorbilder. Meine beste Freundin Katrin ist ein Vorbild für mich, meine Mama.
Ja.
Meine tolle Kollegin Roxana, die unsere Station immer schmeißt.
Ja.
Liebe Grüße an Roxana.
Ja.
Die Zügel in der Hand hält bei uns und den ganzen Sauhaufen da irgendwie versucht, irgendwie, dass alles am Leben bleibt. Und du bist ein Vorbild für mich, Patrick.
Oh, wunderbar.
Ja, naja. Weil ich finde, nein, aber muss man ja einfach mal auch mal sagen, dass mir auch wieder aufgefallen ist, wir im Sommer da im Urlaub waren und so, dass wir so unterschiedlich wie wir manchmal sind, so viel gemeinsam haben wir aber auch.
Ja.
Und so viel kann ich von dir wirklich lernen.
Ja.
Ja.
Ja. Ich kann auch viel von dir lernen, das ist ja auch ein Geben und Nehmen. Deshalb sind wir auch befreundet, das ist ja immer eine Weiterentwicklung.
Ja, aber so, also ich, ganz, ganz viele Vorbilder.
Ja.
Ich will gar nicht wirklich immer so ein. Und Wendy Williams, großartige Frau.
Ja, es gibt viele Dinge, die einen irgendwie, wo man dann so denkt, boah, was die machen, ist total toll. Also muss ich wirklich sagen, oder was die erreicht haben, auch wenn es um den Fight für die LGBTQI geht. Und ich muss auch wirklich sagen.
Chloja Viagra, hallo.
Zum Beispiel.
Toll.
Oder ich muss auch sagen, jetzt in der Folge, unser Gast Gina ist auch ein bisschen ein Vorbild, wie sie sich für die Trans-Community in Amerika einsetzt.
Ja.
Ist der Wahnsinn. Und das war unser Spiel.
Aber man muss mal auch nochmal sagen, mit einer Leichtigkeit.
Ja.
Das habe ich so wahrgenommen, als ich sie kennengelernt habe. Sie hat sowas Leichtes. Vielleicht mag es das sein, weil sie aus dem Tropen kommt. Und das, aber das ist eine Leichtigkeit, bringt die Frau mit, großartig. Man mag ich es sehr. Ein zartes Pflänzchen, eine Leichtigkeit. Toll. Also trotzdem stark, aber trotzdem auch zart.
Ja. Und nun fangen wir wieder an. Hello at all the English listeners.
Muss ich immer noch dolmetschen?
Yes. No, you don't need to dolmetschen. We are back into English and now everyone who can't understand any English, maybe you should switch off. People who understand English, switch on. Or you use this as a learning English teaching moment because we are the Bundesregierung auf Crack podcast from the Germany, Europe. And so stay tuned.
Oh mein Gott. Es geht los. Viel Spaß mit Gina, Leute.
Ja, mit uns. So, hello and welcome. Gina Rosero.
Hi.
Nice to have you here. So, you're an entrepreneur, a model, you're a producer, and you're most important, like a trans activist and trans advocate. Hello, welcome of being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, is it your first podcast you're doing?
It's the first podcast in Germany.
Wow. So we're the first one.
International. I feel so international.
well, we're also international. We're like, no, we're not.
Multicultural.
Multicultural.
Yeah, and we're really excited to be here because you are the first trans Asian playmate of Playboy in August.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thanks, darling.
You're rewriting history.
I'm so excited to be rewriting history. It's such an honor.
Yeah, it is definitely an honor. And I'm really excited that you... Yeah, that you're in the Playboy. Wow.
Well, I can see that. I have to say, I can see that. When I see you, I was like, I was like,
She's hot.
She's a model. She's a model. She has to be. She belongs there.
You're so sweet. No, it's very exciting.
So, we're here to talk a little bit about your journey and your way where you started and where you are right now in your life. And I know that it started because I know you as a friend and I know it started in the Philippines. So tell us like your way ending up in New York in the US.
Well, really, it's been quite a long journey. So I was, you know, born and raised in the Philippines in a very completely different culture, right? I mean, it's a place where... It's a very strict Catholic background.
Yes.
And, you know, we grew up in like going to church three times a week, right? And you come up in that culture and you have, at such a young age, you have this very different, even at such a young age, you felt like there's something different about me. And within that background and growing up in the Philippines, I felt like, okay, how am I going to do this? You know, but I guess your truth just really have to speak for itself that I was so... insisting to my mom that I'm a girl at such a young age, telling her,
yes.
even though my surroundings kept on telling me, no, you should be, you know, the way you grew up. But I think the thing that really made it so, I guess, powerful for me to express that, like I was growing up in the Philippines and I would walk around their house and I would always wear a t-shirt in my head.
Yes.
Or like a blanket.
And some gorgeous hair.
Like we all did when we were younger.
Exactly. Yes, right? And it just felt like super femme.
Yeah.
And, you know, the towel sort of became my, oh, I felt really comfortable here. Mm. You know, I really felt like this is who I am.
Yeah.
So I guess it just got to the point I would always wear that almost every day. And my mom just asked me, so why do you always do that? And I said, Mom, do you see this towel on my hair? I'm a girl. This is my hair.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I did that at 5 years old. And
okay.
Yeah.
So, and was it then like your mom was really supportive? And how was it with your dad? And do you have sisters and brothers?
So I'm the baby. I'm the youngest. I have a brother and two sisters.
Yes.
And you know, grew up in a big family in the Philippines. Mm. You know, I mean, I wouldn't say like fully supportive right away because it was a very different culture. There's no word as trans in the Philippines. We have this word called bakla, which is a very sort of... I guess if somebody used the word bakla, it could mean like you could be an effeminate gay man. It could be like, you know, gender fluid. It's an indigenous word. So there was no understanding of trans. Mm. But the thing that helped me to explain to my mom and my parents and my sisters, because in the Philippines, we have this culture of transgender beauty pageants on national television.
Wow.
So for a minute, you think about it, in the most traditional Catholic culture, we have a beauty pageant on national TV.
Well, that's so good. I love that.
Yeah, it's a contradiction in a way. So I remember watching one of these pageants on TV and I kept telling my mom, I want to be like them. You know, the fact that I could point out to them that like, Mom, I want to be as glamorous as them. I want to be just like them. Like that vision that she could see who I could be, it made it clear for her. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously there's no information of how to do that. I just felt like I want to be like them.
Mm. There's like a big, like I've been to the Philippines and I was called bakla as well. So
yeah,
as he did, but it was fine.
Kann ich gar nicht verstehen, Patrick.
No. And it was totally fine. But what I always found, there were lots of kids which were like, girls like dressed as girls and dresses, and they were at a young age, because I remember like we've been in a village in El Nido, and there were lots of boys like dressed as girls and there was no problem between the other kids or something. That was my experience, but now that's, I don't know, now at the time I think it's much more different at the time when you've been there.
Yeah, I mean the culture is still there, right? Yeah. I mean, like, we have this culture because
colonized by Spain, we have a culture of fiesta celebration, right? Yeah. Let's say, for example, in Frederickstein, there's a birthday of Saint Frederickstein, for example, So that happens for a week in a year, and throughout the whole week, there would be celebrations. There's dance contests, there's singing contests, and usually towards the end of that big celebration, there's a transgender beauty pageant, which is like the main program, which is like the whole family watches the pageant. So it's like a big family affair.
Yeah.
And it happens all over, from the city to like the little villages in the mountains up until like to the national television. Okay. Like you could go to... on Sunday, go to church at 12 p.m. and at 1 p.m. you could see a trans beauty pageant on national television with the whole family.
Mm. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so you have been 5 years old. You told your mom, you saw on the TV this beauty pageant, and you were like, yes, that's where I want to be. So how was then the journey from there till maybe you first entering? You ever entered a beauty pageant?
Yeah.
How was the journey like from there? Was your mom then, you didn't have to wear a towel anymore? You probably grew your hair, or how was the way towards that?
Well, I think when I started school, that's when it really all of a sudden the rules were all being implemented. Like, no, you can only have really short hair, and I wanted to, you know, always steal my sister's uniform. Yeah. And I've tried that a couple of times, and I would always end up in like the guidance counselor office. It's like, you can't wear that. You can't wear that, you know, girly shoes. Yeah. I was always being policed. But because I was just like so, I guess, stubborn. Like, this is really how I felt. Like, if you don't allow me to go to school with like a more feminine outfit, I just won't go to school.
Yeah.
And at some point, there was a compromise. Okay, you could wear that doll shoes and like a shoulder bag, but you have to wear like pants. Mm-hmm. But then also, oh, well, maybe I could like tailor my shirt into a more feminine fitted shirt. Yeah. So that was a compromise, and they allowed me to wear my butterfly barrettes on my hair. So I was very adamant in expressing myself. So even though, you know, the teachers kept on telling me like, no, be a boy, dress as a boy. I just felt like this is who I am. So
yeah.
So how was it then when religion, like the Catholic Church, is so big, like expressing yourself at that young age? Was there like someone approaching from like the church and your family and saying like, hey, that's not wrong? Like, is it contradicting each other?
Or? Yeah, I mean, like I always hear, because I mean, again, it's a very conservative Catholic country, right? I mean, there's still no divorce in the Philippines.
Wow.
The only country in the world where you can't get divorced. That's how Catholic strict it is, right? Mm-hmm. So not necessarily from coming from the priest or, you know, from the church, but because it's such an intense culture that's very... it's a very strict Catholic culture. I would hear it from our neighbors, you know, if they would see me so expressing of my femininity, they would always say, God made you a boy. They would always tell me like the Bible verses and everything. God made you a boy, be a boy. It's like, no, I'm a girl. Mm. I'd always like respond back and just almost fight back that like, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone knows the feeling, like, especially me when I was like gay and I knew that I was a gay person, that you're like feeling, oh, you're different and you have to prove like yourself and you know, you're... Yeah, that there's something not like which fits in the binary system of the world. So I think lots of people can like connect with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then it's even harder like to say, hey, I'm actually like a girl.
And if this is like coming back to your everyday and like your neighbor and like all people around you, like obviously, you know, you're a boy.
Yeah.
It's like, no, but I feel I am a girl. So that makes it even harder to like, you know, because you're fighting for something you already know. And you're the only person who knows that. And I know in my heart,
like it's almost like I know in my heart I'm right.
Yeah.
But the world and the information that the world was given was very limited. Yeah. You know, like I know there was nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
And of course, you experience like getting teased in and walking to school. Because I remember, I think one of the things that was, very painful for me growing up is just, you know, I would walk from home to school and we have this thing called the tuk-tuk, like tricycle drivers. Yeah. And the men, especially the men driving those tricycles, every time they see me, they always like scream at me like, you know, the most derogatory term. So I would always feel like, you know, I would always question in that sense, but also like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
But then because of this culture of trans beauty pageant, little did I know after watching so many of these pageants with my friends when I was 15 years old, I was in front of the stage in our neighborhood watching one of these pageants. It was a big celebration fiesta in our neighborhood. And I remember the woman came up to me and we were watching these pageants and she was like, How come you're not joining this pageant? Yeah. You should join. And this woman named Tiger Lily, who ends up becoming my trans mother and my mentor, she basically told me, she changed my life. She told me at that moment that, why don't you join this pageant? You know, I think you look great. And I think at such a young age, being told that you should join a pageant where, you know, it's almost a rite of passage growing up in the Philippines for young trans girls to join pageants at that time.
Yeah.
Still is, but it's obviously a little bit different now. But to be asked that question, of course, the only answer is yes, mother. Yeah. And I joined a pageant, and that first pageant, I ended up winning second runner-up.
Wow.
Best in swimsuit.
How old were you?
And best in long gown.
Wow.
I was 15.
15, wow.
I was still in high school, and I remember going to school the following day just in full of joy. And I had my sash with me, and my classmates were all like, what are you wearing? I was like, remember?
Yeah.
The woman at the plaza, that was me. And from that moment on, I just felt like, oh, I could really be this, you know, and I just felt like I'm a girl. Like, I have to live this life 24/7. This is who I am.
Did you do that then after the first pageant that you were like, no, I'm like, I'm living my life now as I am? Or you went back to like kind of subtle?
I mean, just think of it, picture it for a moment. At 15 years old, super effeminate, you know, young trans girl being offered almost with that. With that dream, right? And being, getting dressed in the most glamorous outfit to your wigs. You have your assistants, you have your own makeup artist. Wow. Almost like being like, you could be a diva, right? There's this, you're being attracted into like, you could be a diva.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, the thing is like, yeah, I wanna be that. So after graduating high school, I just felt like I wanted to continue this life. And that actually became my job at 15 years old. My first job is a transgender beauty queen.
Wow. Did you continue from the first one, like doing all the what is it called? The pageants?
Yeah, I became the most prominent trans beauty queen at 15 years old. Even I remember there's even different categories for like non-professional beauty pageants for trans girls and professional. But because after that first pageant, I just started winning everything. And at 15 years old, I would join like, you know, the younger trans pageants, and I would, people would always protest it like, no, she's a pro. And like, I'm 15 years old because in a way, because I was so lucky, I was groomed by like one of the best, it's sort of like the ballroom scene. There's different houses. There's different groups. Yeah. You know, I was in the house of TriStar. Yeah. And I just started winning a lot of things, and I learned quickly, you know, how to project myself on stage, you know, your image and how you walk, how you answer question and answer. And it was addicting, you know, I was making money at 15 years old. That was my first job.
I mean, I think it's like important that you make the experience that someone is like, think that you're pretty and that they like you and it like how you look and how you act and how you present yourself, that you like get that experience that you're good, you're nice, people like you. I think that's very important to like everyone, but especially like when you come out as trans, I think.
Yeah, it's like the first support all you get then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like the second, it's my chosen family, right? Yeah. I have my family and they became like, you know, I mean, that was a formative years in my life, right? 15 to 17, you're learning so much, you're open to experiencing so many things. And what could be a better formative years for me, because I was living in the city at the time, but sometimes we would go and join pageants all the way up north in the Philippines.
Cool. Where up the mountains.
All the way up to the mountains and the radio stations in Chinese, Taiwanese already.
Wow.
You know, that's like how far it was. And we had to travel in a bus and travel for like 10 hours just to join a pageant. And that was a perfect training ground.
Wow.
So you did that then from 15 till 17 and won basically lots of pageants and became more secure in yourself and finding yourself. And what was then happening when you were 17? Like, did you continue the journey or was there something where you're like, hey, I want to go further? What was the...
Yeah, I mean, at 17, you know, usually the trajectory of like a young trans girl joining pageants after you've done a couple of years, usually they end up going to Japan and they would work as an entertainer in a club. And in a way, you would continue that life, that glamorous life, joining pageant, but you're in a club, you make more money.
Yeah.
And most of the trans girls that I know, they would make money and then they would send money back home to the Philippines. They would build houses for their mom. Like, that was the dream that I wanted. You know, I wanted to continue making that money.
Yeah.
But then, because my mom's side of my family has been in the United States, so I knew there's always a possibility that I would move to the United States.
Yeah.
So when I was 17, my mom called me, you know, she was already in in the United States, and she called me that my petition, my green card, is now ready and that I could now move to the United States.
Yeah, okay.
And initially, I didn't want to move to the United States because the first questions I asked my mom, is there a trans beauty pageant? And she's like, no, there's no trans beauty pageant. So initially, I didn't want to move there.
Yeah.
But then my mom, who definitely obviously loved me and just want me to be with her and for me to have a good life, she researched this very specific policy called gender recognition law, which is basically a law that allows trans women to change name and gender marker on your legal documents, meaning you could be recognized as the woman that you are.
Yeah.
Something that was still not allowed in the Philippines and in many countries all over the world. So when she told me that, I was like, oh, I'm moving there, you know.
So when you got your green card and stuff, when you went into the US, you went with the female gender marker in your passport and everything?
Not right away, because like you have to move first to the United States and you have to go through the process. You know, we have to, you know, file this paperwork. So you have to go to the court. Ah, okay. So all these hurdles of, yes, there's such a bureaucracy of like, I just want to be who I am.
Yeah.
And, but you have to go through this process of like, you know, legal court. Filing and all that stuff. And I did that. And I think once I've done that, I just even more felt secure, you know, because I'm recognized as the woman that you are. I mean, like, even just the fact that, like, I'm showing my ID to, I don't know, get a drink or anywhere. Like, every time you show your ID and then you present as a woman and then your ID, it's always an opportunity of confusion for people or the people that are obviously not as accepting. It's an opportunity for them to do something bad to you. So.
Did you change? You changed your name, right?
Like,
who picked that name? Like, was that you? Or like, did you always somebody gave you?
Long story. I mean, like, the Gina is like this celebrity in the Philippines that was sort of, imagine there's a channel called MTV, right? So we have that version in the Philippines, and there's this show about this group of like cool girls living in like the high school life, and one of the characters' name is Gina, and I was like, I wanted to be her. So I name, even in high school, people call me Gina already because that's my character.
Yeah.
But then when I was actually filing my name, my mom said, like, don't just spell it G-I-N-A, make it different. Put two E's, you know, like Gina Davis. And I was like, oh, cool, great.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. So I even obviously did it with my mom.
Nice.
So basically, when you came to the US, you lived with your mom. Where did you move? Like East Coast or West Coast? Or?
Yeah, so I first moved to San Francisco.
Cool.
Yeah, nice. Which is also, I mean, a very accepting place in a way, you know, I mean, to be in that place.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I was 17, you know, I spoke English, but not really like, it's a very formal English education that we learned. Like, I didn't know slang, you know, like young English, you know. So I struggled a lot, you know, in a very different culture. Like, I didn't have a trans, you know, family right away in San Francisco. So that presented the challenges. But in a way, obviously, to be with my family was a gift.
Mm-hmm. The thing I know about San Francisco is quite open. You have been there. I haven't been there. Like, with drag queens, trans.
My ex is from there. Yeah.
I mean, it's a very historic place, right? Yeah. I mean, like, so much of the revolution.
And I have to say, I was a little bit overwhelmed. I was like, it was a little bit too gay for me. Because he lived in a Castro, and the Castro was like, you know, all the gay, you know that. And I was there. I was like, I don't know if I need like a gay butchery, a gay bakery, a gay cinema. It's like, I don't.
They're giving it to you all.
It's very gay. So, like guys walking naked in the streets. So it's like, it was a lot to me. But I mean, I like it. I like it, like how open it is and like.
Yeah. So I have to say that was really a perfect place for me.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of Filipinos.
Yeah.
In San Francisco specifically, there's a city right outside San Francisco called Daly City, which is like Little Manila.
Ah,
like literally everything in Manila was there. So it felt closer to home. But then when I started, you know, having different friends, you know, I felt like still an outsider because I still couldn't understand like, you know, some proper English or the slang English. And I remember, you know, meeting my gay best friend who was like, girl, you need to know proper English, you know, like let's listen to Destiny's Child, you know, so you know all the like the young English because I was so formal, you know,
in my
the way I spoke. So,
and what happened next then? So you come to the US, you get your new passport, your new name, like basically your whole life kind of starts, or was it, how did it feel for you? Like,
yeah, it was really refreshing. And obviously mom also coming from a very traditional background, and again, nothing wrong with it. Mom wants you to be a nurse or an accountant.
Yeah.
And that was in a way expected to a lot of obviously Filipinos. in a very traditional family. I just know that was not for me. I think the bigger dream, sort of like, how do I continue that life that I was living in the Philippines? So the bigger dream is like, I wanted to try modeling because I've always dreamed of wanting to be a model. Yeah. So I tried a little bit in San Francisco with like different agencies, but I was just like, I was given an advice. It's like, if you really want to do this, you have to move to New York City. That's the place to do this and really to give it a shot. Mm. So I decided in 2005 that like, I have to do it all the way.
Okay.
I moved to New York City in 2005.
And how old were you? 2005?
I just turned 21.
Oh, wow.
So imagine 21 years old, just moved to New York City.
Yeah.
Trouble is happening.
So it was like 4 years in San Francisco, acclimatized? No.
Yeah, I mean, you get familiarized with the culture.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 21, you know, I wanted to give it a shot in New York City. Obviously, in a big place like New York City, even presented a much difficult challenge. You know, I barely know anybody. Yeah. I know a friend of a friend that told me that, like, moved to New York City, meet this friend, and, you know, all the stories of, like, moving to New York City. Yeah. I remember finding an apartment at Craigslist with, like, just my bed and a side table, like, a roommate, like, all the way in, like, you know, a very far place, and it's also a very, very different city. But I had a dream. I had a big dream that I really wanted to be a model. But also, this is 2005, completely different time. Mm. At the time, obviously, there was an out trans fashion model at the time. So I made the decision to, if I'm going to model, I won't tell my model agent that I'm trans.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And because I've learned a little bit of the history at that point, like a lot of the trans girls that were modeling, when they got outed by the press, their careers disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, they were my inspiration, but also I was afraid of what happened to them might happen to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like, I started modeling right away.
So you got an agency? Like,
I got
right
an
away?
Agency. Wow. I got with Next Models, mm-hmm. and obviously they were amazing and. You know, I work with different agencies, but Next Models was like the one that really like represented me, a very, you know, established one of the bigger agencies. And I started working, and I was working. And I remember even the time I was working at like some hostessing job, but I just kept on working, that I felt like, you know what, I could now really fully commit and like leave my hostessing job and just model full time.
Yeah.
And I really take a risk. You have to go all the way. I mean, I've been working, I work with many different like cosmetics company. I mean, I think just the journey itself, because I was modeling, yes, I was working as a model.
Yeah.
Even at a point like working with so many different brands that like I felt like my childhood friends would know. So in a way, yes, I was modeling, I was working, but I was also living this double life.
Yeah.
You know, I was so afraid that, you know, if I do a big job or like a global campaign, someone might say something.
Yeah.
I even remember going to my agency and they told me like, yeah, this campaign is going to the Philippines. They're going to have a billboard on top of like this place called the place where I grew up. And I was like, oh crap, what am I going to do? So I actually said no to the job, you know, because I just had this thought process that like the bigger the job that I do, the bigger the paranoia that somebody might find out.
Mm.
So I guess for many years, I've had enough, you know, like it does something to your psyche that like you're always hiding, but you want to be out there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're living in a very public life as a fashion model, you know, doing cosmetics campaign, you're out in public. So I always would just go home and thinking that like, oh, tomorrow there's going to be a news tabloid about me that like Gina's trans and my career would disappear. Yeah.
Okay. You had like a TED talk. That was the point where you said like, hey, like I won't get outed from other people. Mm-hmm. When you made the decision, I'm outing myself as a trans woman. So how did that happen? So you modeled for how many years in New York?
So this is 7 years at that point. And I think a year before 2014, I was going through the process of like, do I come out? Well, am I ready to come out? What's going to happen to my career if I come out? So I there was a lot of back and forth of like what I wanted to do. And you know, it got to me. I even had eczema all over my body because like the stress of wanting, literally the stress was coming out of my body. And I guess also at the point it got to the point that I was ready to tell my story. You know, I think after I made the decision, I would, like nothing could stop me.
Can I ask how old you have been exactly?
I was 30 years old when I decided.
When you said that. Yeah. Okay. Because like with me, it's always happening in seven, like every 7 years you have like a major change. Like, and sometimes it's funny. And is it also not, what is it called? called lunar eclipse or something, when you're like 28 till 30, where you do like big changes, when you come on full circle with the stars and planets you're born or something.
I heard about something around that. Yeah. For me, it was my eczema. The eczema was like all over my body. Yeah. It was, I mean, at some point my dermatologist thought I had scabies.
Ooh.
Because it was so much in my body in distress. And yeah. I had a breakdown at my dermatologist's office. Okay. Like, I need to listen to this eczema.
Yeah.
So I just felt, okay, if I'm going to take this risk, I have to just go big or go home. Okay. So I told myself, what's the most powerful platform there about telling your story? I mean, TED Talk is the most powerful platform to tell the story. And I know a friend who had spoken at TED. I reach out an email and say, oh, I'll introduce you to them. And next thing I know, I was being interviewed by TED that like, this is the first time we're going to be talking about this on the main big TED Talk that happens once a year.
Yeah.
And they said, this is a story that we're ready to talk about. What a perfect timing. So, and I've never given a public speech before. So just, we're going to give you a speech coach. And it was a journey. And then I just felt like when I did that, I was freeing myself. I didn't really know what was going to happen after the TED Talk.
So you come on a TED Talk, you like, how many people are in the room? How can, like, I know the TED Talks, you can definitely find this episode on TED Talk when you Google TED Talk Gina Rosero, if people are interested in it to see it. And like, how many people are in the room? Like, you can't.
So at the time, I mean, there's 2,000 people in the room, like speaking in front of the, like, you know, presidents of countries to like founders of Google, like some of the biggest powerful people, and to bare your soul for the first time ever in public, speaking about something that's so truthful to you was, I thought at the time, definitely a big risk, but like the risk that I was willing to take because I just want to free myself.
Yeah.
And after that TED Talk, a week later, they wanted to post that talk right away because the response has been great. And it just changed my life. And it went viral.
Yeah.
And it's, I think at the time, obviously 2014, this is the time when the beginning of like the bigger transgender conversation in pop culture, like Laverne Cox, Time Magazine, Orange is the New Black, Transparent Amazon. So there's a lot of things happening in pop culture. Yeah. And to add this TED Talk, which is, you know, again, it's such a blue chip in a way, conference, you know, for powerful people. And to be there and to have that story being told for the first time was powerful and became viral. And I was invited in so many different places right away.
Wow.
And how did that change your life?
It changed my life in so many. First, personally, I just felt free to just, okay, I've let go of that shame that I felt for so long that I couldn't talk about. But also, it was an opportunity because all of a sudden it started becoming so viral that like I didn't want it to just end on a TED Talk. So I wanted to launch an advocacy. I wanted to continue the conversation about transgender rights because of my background in the Philippines. Yeah. So I started working with the UN, President Obama's State Department about like the things that I'm passionate about. You know, I think the power of that TED Talk was being invited into some of these powerful entities in the world. So I told them what I wanted to do, and which is to advocate for trans rights. So all of a sudden I was traveling around the world, all over the world, Colombia to the Pacific Islands, to all over Southeast Asia, to Hong Kong, to Tokyo, all those places, right? Yeah. And to be speaking about my experience in the global platform was pretty powerful.
Yeah.
But I think after a year or something of doing that, I just felt like I would always find myself in a room where I'm the only trans person in the room. And I just felt like it's such a burden for me to be expected to represent the whole trans community. I certainly can't do that.
Yeah.
I just felt like I think what's missing is for them to really understand the story.
Yeah.
So I just said, why don't I start a production company?
Oh, wow. Quick question. You were always scared with the model agency. Did the model agency drop you or what happened?
That's, this is a great story.
That's like what I would like to know, and our listeners, I think, too.
Yeah. So I remember because I was so excited to just do the TED Talk, a week before my TED Talk, I forgot that like I didn't tell my model agent that I'm doing a TED Talk coming out. So I was like, what do I do? Do I like, I thought of like sending flowers to like writing a poem and all that. So you know what? Whatever. I'm just going to pick up the call and say, Ron, I'm giving a TED Talk. I'm coming out. And my agent was like, oh, coming out as a lesbian. Great. I'm so happy for you. And I said, no, I'm coming out as a transgender woman. It was like the longest 3 seconds of my life.
Oh my God.
But I was so thankful, like the first word that he said, like, I'm proud of you. I honor you. You've been such a great business partner and model for us. We want to support you.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was the best response that one could ask for. And wow. Yeah, and I continued modeling.
Wow. I just saw like you also on the radar because I watched the story with Caitlyn Jenner that was also in the news. And mm-hmm. I saw you have been reaching out to her, or she was reaching out to you as well, because I think when she got her reassignment, her name, or she got her driver's license or something, a passport, I saw you then in the crowd and she's like, oh, there's Gina.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like obviously that moment with Caitlyn Jenner was huge all over the world. Yeah. Obviously, whether it's the intergenerational understanding of like the culture of, you know, the Olympics to like obviously the Kardashians and the power of that, it changed the whole understanding of it. But she's new to transitioning, so she was reaching out to a lot of people. I was the first one, the first out trans woman that she knows that's trans that she met, and we had a talk and like just shared my experience. And and actually one of my first productions, she was like, I want to be part of it. Anyway, I could be part of it. So we did this project with MTV and Logo, and she wanted to sort of like go in to the room and talk to young trans. We did the project with trans youth, and she showed up, which is so great.
What is the show called?
Oh,
Yeah, the show, the first project that we did, it was like a web series that turned into like a TV special called Beautiful As I Want to Be. Which is literally asking transgender youth, how do you define that? Which is basically a process of just like, what is your dream? And we'll find a mentor for you to guide you to that dream. And let's film that process. Yeah. So that's what we did. It was like a 4-episode series.
That's cute. And have you watched her show? Like what was it called? I Am Kate?
Yeah, I was also in her show, just like a lot of people was also invited.
Yeah, but because I watched it also. And I have to say, I liked it, but lots of people was talking shit about it. But I liked it. I watched it. And because I don't know any, I mean, I know now and I know other trans persons, but like at the time I didn't know any trans person. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was very nice and interesting to see, and also like see the struggle, what they have and like what they're going through, and like see their journey. Of course, it's a different journey for Caitlyn Jenner because she's in the Kardashian family. She has all the money to get the surgery and all the money. But like, because also like there were lots of like kids involved and showed trans kids and like what they are struggling with. I thought it's very interesting. And I thought that was, to me personally, it was really good to see like what's going on with trans people.
Yeah, I mean, that show obviously gave such a platform, being on a big network that's shown in 100-something countries. I mean, that you could just imagine how life-changing that is for so many people outside, even outside the United States. So that did really well in exposing, you know, parts of the trans community. Certainly one could say that like it's a very particular experience, but you have to just, at that moment, like the media conversation was so big that like you take the conversation and you go deeper into it, you know? So
I think
really
that's
powerful.
What you did, like, because I knew you at that point, and I was also looking into your stuff. And I think it's nice that people, if they Google now or Bing or whatever website they use, we don't want to make advertisement. So
work it back.
That there is like actually like people like you who went a different route, like, and giving another, I felt like another side of the story, because the media and the press was like also over it. So it made it, I don't know, like I was really happy that there was more, how can you say it in English? More
representation?
More representation.
Yeah, I think it's definitely needed. As I said, it's a very particular experience, and that's her experience. Yeah. Obviously she brought in so many people as well, which is incredible. For me, I was just like the question of how do I combine me as an artist, you know, and in telling stories, because obviously the power in telling stories was like, you can't argue someone's experience, right? So you want to just share as many people's experience. You can't debate someone's lived experience. So what better way for me, because I was given also that access working with the Viacoms of the world, MTV, VH1, Logo, to be all of a sudden, you know, me telling them I want to be like Tyra Banks, you know, from modeling to producing, and telling them like the product, producing projects that I want to do. Like, I've never experienced how to produce, but I just told them this is the kind of story that I wanted to do, and they responded really well. I mean, some of the projects that we did, we won so many different awards. Yes. So I think the response was great. So they just allowed me to create. So, and I think that's really my calling, is to really tell stories and produce stories in so many different formats.
Do you still model?
I still do. Yes.
And you're a fierce model.
I mean, for me, it's storytelling, right? I mean, like me walking down that runway, I feel like I'm telling a story, which is basically I'm the first bitch in this runway, you know? and I just want to do that, you know, and give me the clothes, I will work it. And it's still going to be part of me, and just feel like I love doing that.
So right now, your main focus is on producing. Is there something like a project like which you can maybe tell us, or is there something coming up, or is it still a secret? I'm not sure how much you can tell, but is there something?
I will share as much as I'm allowed to. Well, I'm interested because of my experience. I'm from the Philippines, in a completely different world from, you know, growing up in the Philippines. So I always, there's a travel story. There's something about a competition. I mean, there's many different projects that I'm pitching with like the big network. So,
wow.
Nice.
Amazing. And now from all this production, how did it happen with being on the Playboy? Like, this is like amazing. Like, you're actually doing history. Like, when you told me, I was just like, wow, this is like
Patrick
changing the
like,
world.
Oh my God, Gina's on the Playboy. I was like, oh my God, she was and we were telling everyone. It was like, everyone was like, well, great. Like, great, Nick, yeah.
You're so
sweet. I can't wait to see it though.
I get to show you a little bit in a little bit. I'll give you a little preview. So I received a DM. Mm-hmm. On Instagram.
Wow, that's how it works nowadays. Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it, you know, because I just thought, what is, I mean, obviously the first thing I checked is it's an account with a blue mark.
Yeah.
Is this really real?
Like, yeah.
And it sounded real, but even the fact that like I received an email saying like, we want you to be being offered as a playmate right away. And because they followed my work and they've seen my work on Instagram. And I guess it goes to tell you that like, you'll never know who's watching you online.
Yeah, that's true.
And then we had a meeting, we had a call and it was confirmed right away. So that was, I still just in awe of to be part of such an iconic brand.
Yeah.
But even more so, you know, I was growing up in the Philippines in 1991. I remember seeing the cover of a magazine, this famous trans model named Carolyn Cosi. Her stage name was Tula.
Yeah.
She's an English model, mm-hmm. and she was in a Bond movie. She mm-hmm. had a walk-in role, mm-hmm. and somebody outed her in the early 1980s, and her career disappeared. She was a big model.
Mm-hmm.
But then Hugh Hefner gave her a chance in 1991, being on the cover of Playboy as a comeback story.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at that magazine, telling my trans mother that I want to be like her. And to now, what a full circle, to be part of that family and to be now in communication with her.
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't believe that this is really happening to me. And also, obviously, for a minute, I was just like, I've never posed completely nude in a big mainstream magazine.
Yeah.
I've done art projects with different artist friends.
Yeah.
But to really flaunt yourself and to be celebrated, you know, full of confidence and desire was something new for me in such a mainstream magazine. So I really wanted to make sure that, you know, I'm with the right team. I really feel confident. So it's the best team that I work with. You know, never felt like so secure and so just loved and celebrated and appreciated by the family. And I really say it as a family because they're amazing. Mm. And, you know, how the way they've treated me and even to learn about the history of Playboy and their activism and the LGBT community in reproductive rights in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've started as really such a progressive magazine and to now be part of this, I guess, emergence.
Legacy
of Playboy and the sort of like the new sort of image and the strategy was just iconic. And girl, I'm 80 years old. I get to tell I'm a Playboy playmate girl. So
who was the photographer from the picture?
It was a husband and wife team, French husband and wife team, French and American, named Wisa.
Oh yeah, nice.
And we shot in Costa Rica.
Ooh.
We shot in the Caribbean side in the jungle of Costa Rica.
Wow.
It was so beautiful.
And you're completely naked?
Yes.
Oh wow. Well, I can't wait to see it though.
Yeah,
I can't wait to get my magazine. Sadly for all the German listeners, they can find it online. You can buy it online, but I'm the German print Playboy. It's not in the August issue of the German one, but there are talks. I heard a little birdie told me that there might be something happening in Germany too, because they are also kind of...
they're great birds.
Yeah, they're great birds. So one question, like, why is it still like important to fight like for the right, because it gets more and more into the pop culture and everything. So
I mean, the reality, whether in any cultural moment, you know, a big progress, there's always a backlash, right? I mean, and really, because as someone that works in a global context, whether, you know, working with United Nations, and you see that, you see the backlash from different countries, different like conservative countries that are really making the effort to roll back the rights. Even I speak from a very global point of view. I mean, I come from the Philippines. Even in the Philippines, there's no rights for trans women. I always like to say that, like, being trans in the Philippines is culturally visible, but not politically recognized.
Yeah.
But then when I moved to the US, it was the other way around. Mm-hmm. There was no cultural visibility, but there was some degree of political recognition, meaning you have rights, you could change your name and gender marker, specifically in California. So it's still in many places. I mean, you know, I certainly recognize the degree of privilege that I have, passing privilege to obviously the journey that I've gone in, spaces that I've entered, right? And always making sure that in most places where I entered, like, I'm the only trans person. It's not really a compliment for me. After I noticed that, it's always a question for me. How do I keep the door open, right? And bring more people, whether it's the production that I'm doing, whether it's like someone's looking for a speaker or someone's looking for like a new funding for trans organizations that they need to fund. Like, I always have that in my back pocket of so many amazing trans people that deserves every opportunity they could have. Because I mean, in the US, we're experiencing just the epidemic of murders of trans women of color. In the United States.
It is crazy.
And the fact that it's not a mainstream conversation says a lot about which kind of lives that we value, you know, especially particularly trans women of color, which experiences 3 times the national unemployment rate. Most trans women of color only make, you know, $10,000 a year.
Yeah.
So yes, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah, that's actually so true.
Well, but it's important that there are like people like you who are like coming out at some point, showing the people, okay, you can be trans, you get the jobs if you want. So it's like, it's to have like a role model like you to like show the people, okay, it can be also good and like there's nothing wrong with it. And it's like, you know,
for me, it's just because I come from the Philippines that, I mean, we grew up poor in the Philippines. Yeah. Like I can't escape the fact that like that was my journey. So for me, when I'm really entering spaces, like I just tell my story, right? And like those stories comes with so many different types of people that deserves as much as what I've had. Yeah. So I'm very aware of that.
Yeah. Wow.
The thing is, we always have like a segment in our podcast and it's basically called Jung, Unschuldig and Schwul. And it's basically like when you could turn time back and you look at yourself or younger people, what to tell them, what you didn't know at that point. Is there something you would...
advice.
Good advice or like what you would tell yourself or something like for people who are struggling because we're different or we are not different.
Yeah.
But we just don't fit in this binary system.
I'm very particularly interested in history of the Philippines, because actually Philippines is a country that was colonized by, you know, by Spain, by America for, you know, 500 years, right? But actually before colonization, Philippines have long understanding of gender fluidity. In our main Tagalog language in the Philippines, we don't actually have he or she on our language.
Wow.
So I think when I tell young trans girls about some advice or their history, I always just tell them that like you have always been part of history.
Okay.
That there's people like you even at the beginning of time. So know that you're part of a long history, that know that it's a journey. Also, just from a practical sense, take your time, you know, like don't rush it. Because I remember when I was 15 years old, I was so anxious to just like get it done in whatever way.
Yeah.
So, and also obviously support yourself. I mean, surround yourself with people that support you and love you, right? And sometimes it just takes that one person. Like I had one person that truly, fully believed in me 1,000%.
Wow.
My trans mother, Tiger Lily, right? Who like showed me the way, who gave me love. So find that, you know?
Okay, that's really good advice. And and your chosen family, that's what we always talk about. That's the main big thing. You can choose your family and choose the people you surround yourself. And you should never forget that, actually. That's really important.
Even the chosen families, there's dramas, you know. But fact that you could go in that journey, that you could make that choice is great. You know?
Oh, thank you so much for being on our podcast, like our first English-speaking
Thank
guest.
You.
That's amazing.
I love being the first.
Yeah. And we're really lucky to spend some more time with you because...
I'm very looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yes. So thank you again. And yeah.
And we'll give you a little preview of Playboy once we get
yes. Oh, yes.
I want actually the magazine.
Well, I want
it's in my luggage.
I want the magazine too, but I also want to see it now.
Yeah, we want to see it now. So wir sprechen mal wieder ein bisschen Deutsch.
Sprechen Deutsch, genau.
Dann war es das eigentlich für heute schon. Ach, one more thing. If people wanna follow you or find you, like, where can they do that? Like,
yeah, just, it's my name, Gina, with two E's, Rosero.
Yeah.
On all social media.
On all social medias.
Das war's für heute.
Dann sagen wir, uns kann man ja auch noch folgen bei @stadtlandspul.
@fkfbln.
@parout. Und dann freut euch, wir hören uns denn nämlich in 2 Wochen wieder.
Ja.
Und wir sagen ciao.
Tschüss, Jan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stadtland. Der Podcast. Stadtland.